and we're live. This is Ron Stefanski with another episode of Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the disruptors, those seemingly ordinary humans out there who are making an extraordinary impact in the world in which we live. This technology-driven, 5G-wired, workforce-augmented, technology-interconnected, globally interdependent, Web3 immersive, AI-accelerated, pandemic-interrupted world of learning out there. And we have a tremendous technology thought leader with us today who has gone down a very, very creative path to make an impact with the future generation of those who are going to pursue careers in STEM and STEAM. And that's Brian Kelly, the Director of Data Products for Microsoft. Brian, it is so exciting to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Oh my gosh, Ron, the excitement is mine. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So excited to talk to you as well as your audience about the future of STEM storytelling and why this moment is so critical.
Well, you touched on so many things there that we need to get right into. And so I think it starts with your own pursuit of a technology career, where, you know, your origin story really figures prominently into this whole narrative. So I want to maybe start with that and share with our audience a little bit about what got you into data products, which got you into the world of technology. And, you know, what preceded that was obviously a curriculum in STEM.
Oh my gosh, Ron, I think that's, you're asking the most important question. Where did it all start? I'll tell you, it started with my parents. My father grew up in rural Georgia. He asked about a map and wanted to see the map of the world. And they told him, you don't need to see a map of the world. You'll never actually go there. He left home at 15 and traveled the world really for the rest of his life as a merchant marine. When he came back to the beach and had my brother and I with my mom, he said there will come a day in which computers will run everything. He had a vision for the future. And my brother and I asked about a computer. Asked about, you know, can we get one? Like, so cool. We saw the commercials or whatever. And my mom said no. My mom said they're expensive. We don't know how to use them. What are we gonna do? And my dad had the vision, and he said the kids in more affluent areas. I grew up in Seattle, more affluent parts of Seattle. They would have computers. Students in other parts of the world would have computers. Therefore, we needed to have computers because his kids were going to have to compete at a global level with those from more affluent areas and those from other parts of the world. And so he made the investment. My parents made the investment into that first computer for us. And I'll tell you, I just went, I haven't done this. The computer's still at my mother's house. I just went and actually looked at what the computer cost back then and what it would cost in today's dollars. And back then, it was $2,000. In today's dollars, it would be nearly $8,000. And honestly, I sat there stunned, like, that's a
right.
major.
That's a huge, major. When you think about it, I think that's a great way to look at it as a present cost of money, is that you're talking about your parents making an extraordinary investment in your future and your brother's future. And I think that's... Yeah. You know, that's a really, really inspiring story, you know, part of this narrative. So you got the computer, and then you went about and did what? Did you learn on your own? Were there resources for you to kind of figure this out?
I did a lot of learning on my own, my brother and I. There were some classes back then, computer classes were honestly more word processing and typing classes. So there wasn't a great deal of value in terms of my future career. But the idea of being comfortable with the technology. I also got involved with Lakeside High School in Seattle. They had a summer program called LEAP. I was involved in that. I was involved with Governor's School for Leadership at Seattle University. I was involved with Business Week at Eastern Washington University. Like every summer, my parents had my brother and I into some sort of enrichment activity. And I'll tell you, I believe it to be true. I preach it to my kids. Champions are made in the off season when other folks are content to play. when other folks are content to waste time, that's the time when you can spend, when I spent continuing to develop my skills and curiosity. Not everything always worked, but it just put in me like this insatiable desire to learn and to grow, and my belief that technology would be something very special to me in the future.
And so then as you completed your schooling and you started thinking about technology, how did that propel you and how did it ultimately get you to the chair you sit in now as a director of one of the world's largest technology companies ever in the history of the world?
Oh, my
God.
You're
sitting on a big perch now, so.
Well, I'll tell you, my father actually died my senior year of high school, April of my senior year. So I would graduate in June. He passed in April. And it was a really confusing, dynamic time for my family. I ended up going to Bradley University. I was a National Merit Commended Scholar, had a great scholarship package kind of that first year. And then things kind of turned around and it got to be a little stressful for my mom and for me and my brother, and ended up not finishing and had to like figure it out. And so from that point, I had some, you know, restaurant jobs and some other things, just trying to figure out like what's next. And finally, I started working at Elon, the online mortgage broker, and just a regular kind of analyst job. I was excited to get it. I just got married. My wife was pregnant at the time. And I just felt like I had so much more to offer and so much more to do. And so I actually went, I did not have a computer at that point. Even after kind of doing some things in college, I didn't have my own computer at that point. And so I would go into Barnes and Noble, I would look up, you know, Microsoft Access and SQL and all these other kind of coding books. I would make notes and then I would go back into the office when no one was there and I would work on an application. For months, I did this and I had this idea like I could, you know, there wasn't an app for my team, the post-closing department. So I'm like, I could do something for this department. I could, you know, I'm smart enough, I could figure something out. And I did. And after a few months, I showed it to my manager. She was amazed, like, when did you do this? And she was kind of confused. But ultimately, the entire department started using it. Along the way, my brother, who at the time was working for IBM Global Services, told me about a reporting package that they use called Crystal Reports. And one night, while hunting around in servers, I found Crystal Reports. I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is what my brother mentioned. So I downloaded it, installed it, and started learning how to build reports for this application that I created in Crystal Reports. And that, like, it was this immediate intersection between kind of the business, the technology, the design, kind of the information, how it's consumed. It just really made a lot of sense to me. Ended up kind of being a lot for them to handle with me doing all this other stuff. And then I ended up leaving. And I joined another company, smaller company, Eat Tech Corporation. They did restaurants and hotel kind of back office management. So perpetual inventory for a restaurant. And to this day, so many things for me come up with restaurant analogies and menus. But the idea was, hey, when you sell a burger, we're going to take out a quarter pound of beef from inventory. Small company, 20 people. They didn't have anyone who did any of their reporting or analytics. And so they said, can you do it? I was like, yeah, I can do it. And honestly, I don't think they believed me. I got in there. And Ron, I'm telling you what, I was working. Now, let me back up just a little bit. My wife had our first child the day that I was supposed to start that job. And
are you kidding me? Oh my gosh.
Oh God. Ron, I told my wife, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna drop you off at the hospital and then I'm going into work because I'm not gonna miss this. But I called them I called them and they said, no, please don't come in. We get it. I'm like, I don't want you to think that I'm lying. But I worked for them 2 weeks, Ron, and they came back and they said, Brian, we completely underestimated you. We completely, you know, are amazed at what you've done in the first 2 weeks, and we want to make it up to you. Here's a raise. They gave me a raise in the first 2 weeks. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It's a miracle. Thank God. I have a new baby. This is like, I'm perfect. Keep working there. Another 2 weeks goes by, Ron, and they give me another raise. We're sorry. We underestimated you. You're doing amazing work. I'm like, wow, like, I'm so happy. Like, this, thank God, this is a miracle. And loved what I was doing there. Loved the company, greatest company, I think, to this day. And learned so much, like that opportunity to be in that environment. And honestly, based upon the work that I did, they were able to develop really a consulting practice around that reporting and analytics work, because they were selling a package of software, but now they were able to add on like this professional services capability that now you can get all of these customized reports. And so I became a source of revenue for that company. Great opportunity. My wife ended up finding herself pregnant again. And I told them, I'm like, you know, not for, I was living in the Bay Area at the time. You know, maybe I need to be around my family. And they're like, you know what? We want you to stay. Here's another raise. I'm like, oh my God, please stop with the raise. Please stop with, like, you're amazing. But I ended up leaving and joined T-Manage, which later became a part of Megapath Networks, and worked on reporting and analytics for them, and really developed this idea of being able to package our reporting and analytic capabilities and being able to productize those things. And so before it was, well, hey, we have these reports, but I came to them like, you know, it's not just the reports. Like, we can build silver, gold, platinum packages in which we add on additional capabilities. And so that was very forward thinking and very unique. And it took me some time to learn about selling ideas, about bringing people along, about change management.
Yeah, let me jump in here. I have a question for you. I want to jump in here. So you have had this intensive self-study learning journey. And, you know, when we look at people in tech, it's very often the case that people go to a formal learning program at a four-year school, or maybe it's a two-year school, and then a year or two in, witness your boss, you know, Bill Gates, you know, and then decided, no, I can do the rest on my own and I can be self-taught. You know, we're looking more and more at skills-based hiring and taking the degree away as a proxy for deciding how people learn. I mean, I think you're the poster child of that, right? Because you had this passion and it propelled your learning, and you did this intensive study in the evenings and on your own. And that's rare. You know, not everyone's doing that. But what do you think it is about technology that allows for more skills-based success than other fields?
Wow. So I think part of it is regulation. Right? That tech is not as heavily regulated as healthcare, for example, right? Or as being an electrician, right? You don't want somebody just futzing around and getting electrocuted or electrocuting somebody else. And so I think the fact that it's not as heavily regulated gives an opportunity for people to demonstrate skill after it follows their curiosity, right? Because
curiosity. Obviously that's what you did. And that ultimately got you to Microsoft and then Samsung and then Microsoft again. So let me ask you this, Brian, you know, you're working in data, you're working in this field that you're really passionate about. At what point, you know, I want to get to our our real center story here, which is Cass Freeman. And so you're working along, you're doing this job, you're being a good father, you're being a good worker, you're being a great executive at Microsoft, one of the preeminent companies. And then you decide, well, that's not really enough. I really have a passion that I have to take further. And that, you know, what ignited your passion to, you know, to sort of evangelize STEM among people of color? Because that's, you become like the ultimate technology evangelist here.
Well, you know, I tell you what, Ron, I didn't start out thinking this way. It was just, it's a part of who I am. And within my friend group and people I know and folks that I've mentored, it's just what comes out of me. Now, I think the key difference or what shifted in January of 2024, I was actually on a journey with my middle kids who are sophomores in high school to get them in a STEM summer program. And so we're going through the application process. I'm standing over their shoulder, cheering on, and these are going to be my little mini me's. And But there was a specific program that they were applying to. And there's this question around, what have you done with data? And it just was like this bolt out of the blue, thinking like at 15, 16, what could you have done with data? And like my mind, like standing there, was like, you know, everything shifted for me in that moment of standing over their shoulder and watching them fill out that application. And I just saw a way to bring more people to places like that, right? So it takes time and effort to find these programs and apply. And here's, let me back up just super quick. So much encouragement is around encouraging Black and brown folks and underrepresented minorities and socioeconomically disadvantaged folks to get into STEM programs in college, which is great. Absolutely here for it. I believe it. I also believe that if you have not had any exposure prior to a CompSci 101 class, it is going to be extremely difficult, probably discouraging, disillusionment. Like there's so many things that can come in.
That won't allow you to progress in that level of study, right? You're not going to progress. Right. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to opt out.
Correct. Especially when you are sitting in classrooms with people whose parents are like me, who've been teaching their kids for 10 years about technology, about different programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You'll get into those places and be like, wow, everyone seems to know, but I don't know. And that can be so discouraging. So as I started to think about it, I'm like, we have to start sooner. We have to create the awareness, the interest, the understanding. Right. That enables,
well, also the foundations, right? The foundations, right?
Exactly.
It's math and science at its core level. It's algebra. It's trigonometry.
Right.
You know, it's chemistry.
Yeah. But now here's the thing: the hard sciences. When people hear those things, it makes it difficult to connect with a job. With like, what do they actually do? Does someone like me sit around and just have a math book out and that's what my life is? I don't want that. Like, not too many people love math in that way, right? So for me, like in that moment, like, how do we contextualize these necessary lessons around math, statistics, you know, like the fundamentals? How do we contextualize that in such a way that folks understand authentically what it leads to and the impact that it can have on their lives and on their communities? So we're not just sitting back saying, well, there's some math guy over there doing that thing. Well, I would never
go check the box, right?
Right. So it's not that. It's using your creativity, it's using your insight coupled with these phenomenal technological tools that we have access to.
Right. So I mean, you are a man with a mission. I mean, you are an evangelist around data. It's crazy how passionate you are about this, and your passion extends to helping not only, you know, starting with your kids, but kids in general to be more passionate about STEM. So give us the teaser about Cass Freeman, and then we're going to take a quick break and come back, and we're going to hear this story in a second episode. So there she is, Cass Freeman. So give our audience, our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Brian Kelly, the director of data products at Microsoft and a newfound author of Cass Freeman Decision Trees. Tell us a little bit, give us a little teaser about the book, and then we'll take a break.
Oh my gosh. So I'll tell you, this started with the idea of presenting tech in an authentic way. One of the most frustrating things for me, whether I'm watching movies or TV or reading books, often tech is misrepresented in media. And so I wanted to present what I do and what many other kind of data science folks do in an authentic way, but in a relevant way that aligns with a coming of age story. And so that's where I started. I started with kind of the core principles and really designed the story around that. And so I often tell people I don't consider myself a writer. I consider myself a storyteller. And I had a story that I wanted to tell. And honestly, in that moment as I was standing over my kids, the entire series just downloaded to me. And it was incredible. Like, okay, there's this girl and she got to go to one of these camps. Now, what is she doing after? How can she take those skills and those abilities and apply them and see results in her real life? And so the story follows her leaving this incredible camp and coming back home to her father's restaurant to find out it's struggling.
All right. So let us let them settle on this. To our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Brian introduce the story, this powerful story about this young girl, Cass Freeman, and how she has become a vehicle for Brian to really put his passion for data and his belief that passion, that data can be a solution to so many societal problems and so many practical problems. And so this is what Disrupt Ed is all about. It's about disrupting the world as we know it. And we know we need so many more people to be looking at technology as an answer and understanding both the challenges and the opportunities inherent in it. And you've done this in such a creative way. You're almost like, you know, you're like, you know, the Harry Potter series where she just downloaded this idea of all these characters in 8 different books, you know, and you've come up with this whole series and we're starting it. I feel like we're on the ground floor of this big opportunity to see this unfold. So to our listening and viewing audience, stay disrupted with us. Listen to this podcast, share with your friends, comment on it, give us your feedback, and come back for episode 2 because we got so much more to share with Brian Kelly here from Microsoft. Thank you, Brian, and let's take a quick break and come back.